Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. On Tuesday, April the 14th, coming up, a sculpture in Kent by a world-famous artist has been sold off.
This is public art, and that's what he's famous for. And public art, it helps people understand the place. They feel attracted to it. They go to see this stuff. It boosts tourism.
A TV star says he's selling his home in Kent.
I can't have the life I used to have, but whether you choose to believe it or not, I really wanted to come out of that anyway. Obviously, not in the dramatic way that I did.
And the Jills are back in League Two action tonight.
We'll have a look at rotating on Tuesday because I don't want any injuries, you know, and anyone who knows football, they don't want to be injured in the summer. It's their time off with their families. They need to finish the season positive, do their work, get back for next season. So there'll be no risk on anyone.
But first, the boss of South East Water has been back at Parliament today to be questioned by MPs following recent outages in Tunbridge Wells. David Hinton's been accused of giving incomplete and inaccurate evidence at a previous hearing. Well, let's hear some of what happened at the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee when he was questioned by Chair Alistair Carmichael.
You recall last time we discussed the input of the local Member of Parliament in Tunbridge Wells, Mike Martin. We've received correspondence from Katie Lamb, whose constituents were affected. Can I just share with you what she said? South East Water was unable to answer even the most basic factual questions, such as, is there actually any bottled water at this bottled water station? Members of her team repeatedly had to drive to the station themselves to establish the facts. She had people contact her who were registered as vulnerable and still unable to access water. Some had newborn babies. There was no number for her to call to help them. South East Water could take days to respond to their supposedly instantaneous email address. They simply had no idea what was going on. Doesn't sound that different from the November-December outage.
We did learn some lessons. Clearly, we've got more to learn. We've put in the short-term resilience plan, which picks up a number of lessons from both events, which were pretty much concurrent. And we've also got a transformation programme we're putting in place for the business to ensure that we pick up all the lessons from these different events, both in terms of engineering side, but also in terms of response. And I'm really disappointed to hear that customers had that experience. One of the things we put in place...
Are you hearing this for the first time?
No, I'm not hearing it for the first time. But I'm just recognising that we hate it when customers, particularly priority service registered, but any customers, do not receive that alternative water. And that is one of our key focuses. We delivered nearly 35,000 deliveries to vulnerable customers during the January event. Mm-hmm. And I hate it when we miss any. And to hear that it upsets me, and we need to do better.
We'll hope to bring you reaction to David Hinton's performance in tomorrow's episode of the podcast. Now, all this comes as South East Water say they'll look at increasing the amount of compensation on offer to some of the businesses impacted by those water outages. They'd initially set aside £600,000 to distribute, but had faced pressure from local MP Mike Martin. He's been talking to Kate about the review.
This is great news that South East Water are going to reconsider the amount that they're going to give to businesses to compensate them for all of the money they lost in December in that outage. We still don't know exactly how much that amount's going to grow to, but we're encouraging businesses to submit their claims with evidence, with your accounts and all the things they ask for, and hopefully the size of that pot will grow and grow.
Because at the moment, I think it's sitting at around £600,000 to cover all of the impacted businesses. Wasn't there an estimation that it was that the real figure is somewhere closer to sort of £18-19 million?
Yeah. So the pot at the moment is £600,000, and my office gathered evidence from 100 businesses, and it came to £1.2 million. So twice what South East Water set aside. And if you scale that amount up, it comes to about £18 million. So it's certainly more than the £600,000 they've put aside, and we're glad that they're going to review it and increase it.
It's a huge amount of money to be missing from the local economy. I know that you've been speaking to business owners and those that have been impacted. What sorts of stories are you hearing from businesses that are still struggling?
Well, I mean, there are businesses who've had to not give as many shifts or lay off staff. Those that had kind of severe cash crunches and have had to look at delaying spending decisions or investments. It's been a real problem. And as ever, the businesses that are affected are the small ones with two or three employees, you know, a relatively small revenue stream. The big businesses, the chains, are, you know, affected but effectively okay. And so it's the small businesses that I'm trying to look out for here.
And I know that you had Ofwat CEO Chris Walter in Tunbridge Wells to hear from businesses. Was that a successful visit from your opinion? Do you think he was able to understand sort of the real impact that people are seeing?
Yes, so Ofwat are currently doing an investigation in South East Water into whether they've breached the terms of their license to supply water. And so this visit from the CEO, Chris Walters, was part of that investigation. So we went to some local businesses. We heard from local residents as well. And I think it just, you know, I don't want to put words in the CEO's mouth, but Chris was saying that it really brought home to him the level of impact on people, and it encourages him, it encourages him to redouble his efforts to make sure that report comes quickly and is effective at holding South East Waters to account.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and police investigating the death of a 19-year-old man in Whitstable have arrested two people on suspicion of murder. Ashton Harrington was found with stab wounds in Belmont Road in the early hours of Good Friday. Two men, aged 19 and 21, were detained at a property in Sittingbourne yesterday afternoon. Police say they're not looking for anyone else after two people were found with potentially life-threatening stab wounds at a house in Ashford. Emergency crews were called to Fountains Close in Willesborough Lees just before 8 yesterday morning. A 61-year-old man was taken to the William Harvey Hospital, while a woman who's 58 was flown to London for treatment. Meantime, a man's been taken to hospital after being attacked by two men in an alleyway in a village near Rochester. The victim, who's in his 20s, briefly lost consciousness after it happened between Borstal Street and Cordelia Crescent earlier this month. An investigation is underway. Now, council bosses in Kent have confirmed to the Kent Online podcast that they've sold off a sculpture by a world famous artist to raise income. Two stones by Anthony Gormley, who's the man behind the Angel of the North, have been on display outside the Kent History and Library Centre in Maidstone for more than a decade. Prior to that, they'd been in Ashford. Well, I've been speaking to Maidstone Council leader Stuart Jeffrey, who's not at all happy that they've gone.
They've been here, I think, 13 years. And yes, before they were here, they were in Ashford. They got vandalised in Ashford and needed to be repaired. And so when the new library opened, they've been installed outside in a very prominent place. I don't think there is anywhere quite as prominent if you're driving through the town.
Do you think it's important to, when we've got a bit of artwork like this by someone so famous, to really celebrate it, I guess?
Absolutely. This is public art, and that's what he's famous for. And public art, you know, helps people understand the place. They feel attracted to it. They go to see this stuff. It boosts tourism, as well as being art that is benefit in of its own thing. So yes, it's really important. And you know, to have a piece, an installation by somebody as famous as Gormley, right in the heart of Maidstone, is a really important thing. And there was no discussion about them going. They've just disappeared. People are absolutely furious about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the reaction been locally? Do you know when they went?
As far as I can tell, they went last week, very quietly. I learnt about it towards the end of the last week through one of the Facebook posts saying, where are they gone? And there's a whole discussion about, you know, you can't take this stuff away without having some form of discussion with us. It's important art. It's, you know, he is Gormley studied in Maidstone 45 years ago. He's a part of our culture. And, you know, this was, say, one of his first major pieces. So Losing it is really quite heartbreaking.
Any idea where they've gone, Stuart?
So I understand that the Gormley Foundation has bought them back. I assume that Kent County Council have offered them back to his company. So they've not gone to a private collector. They are still around, but Kent County Council have sold them as part of their budget balancing fire sale. They've got rid of a lot of art, and I suspect more is going to go.
We know, obviously, Stuart, that local authorities are under a huge amount of pressure to balance their books and to budget accordingly. Why are you so passionate about KCC getting rid of artwork? But some might say, oh, it's just a bit of art, it doesn't really matter. Why does it matter? What other things could they have done to balance the books?
Art matters in and of its own accord. It builds culture, it provides history, it provides context to, and it provides beauty. And these things build communities, they build culture. So they are really important. And selling assets to pay for a revenue budget, the budget that you spend every year, you can only sell stuff once. So it is really self-defeating. What Kent County Council should have done is come up with schemes to save money from the revenue budget rather than trying to throw these one-off windfalls from fire sales into that budget. Or they could have put council tax up by the amount that most councils put council tax up by. They've played some political games and caused what the finance director has described as an existential risk to Kent County Council through their very, very poor budget.
Well, this is the statement we've had through from a spokesperson at Kent County Council.
KCC recognises the cultural significance of Two Stones and Anthony Gormley's connection to Maidstone. Therefore, the decision to sell Anthony Gormley's Two Stones back to the artist was taken carefully as part of KCC's ongoing work to manage the significant financial pressures facing Kent. Kent is in a similar position to most other local authorities in having to make difficult financial decisions. The private sale enables the council to raise income without increasing costs for residents or reducing frontline services. Returning the works directly to the artist also ensures their ongoing care and preserves the potential for future public exhibition. Responsible leadership requires difficult decisions to ensure the council remains financially sustainable while continuing to support culture in ways that are affordable and appropriate. The sculptures were dispatched at the end of March to be reunited with Anthony Gormley.
You can let us know what you think. Are you going to miss the artwork? It was quite prominent as you drive into Maidstone Town Centre. Or perhaps you're not particularly fussed about art. Is it right to sell it off to raise an income for the County Council? You can let us know by commenting on the story at Kent Online or indeed getting in touch via our socials. Meantime, Kent County Council say they're at the heart of an international collaboration following a trip to Belgium. As part of their work with the Straits Committee, KCC met with other countries to discuss economic, transport and environmental opportunities. The council say European partners have a strong desire to work with the UK and Kent is seen as essential to that relationship.
Kent Online reports.
Now, this is one of our most read stories on the website today. A man who subjected his Folkestone partner to 3 months of angry, aggressive and intimidating behaviour has avoided being sent to prison. Kate joins me now with more on this story. Kate, what happened?
Well, a court was told Sean Connolly became so controlling over his girlfriend, he tracked her bus journey, forced her to prove over FaceTime it was running late and ordered her to undress in the street. Canterbury Crown Court heard the pair had met on Snapchat in May 2023 and they very quickly started living together. But the 28-year-old soon started to bombard her with calls and messages, monitor her movements, accuse her of cheating and cut her off from her loved ones. In one 32-day period, there were as many as 894 calls and video calls between the pair, the majority made by Connolly. He lives in Weyhill in Haslemere in Surrey now. He admitted an offence of controlling and coercive behaviour, and a judge was told he'd tackled a cocaine habit, reduced his alcohol consumption and addressed his mental health problems. He was given a 12-month community order and must do 200 hours of unpaid work. He's also been issued with a 5-year restraining order and told to pay £800 in costs.
Kate, thank you. Thank you. you ever so much. A man is still in a critical condition in hospital a month after a car was hit by a train on a level crossing in Kent. The driver was flown for treatment after it happened in Richborough near Sandwich on March the 10th. An investigation is continuing. Two teenagers accused of starting a fire that swept through a former Debenham store in Canterbury are due in court today. Nearby homes had to be evacuated after the blaze broke out in the city centre building in December 2024. 17-year-old boys were not allowed to name are due at Folkestone magistrates charged with arson. A Dartford man has avoided prison after stealing more than £1,000 worth of rubber mats from a hospital. Stephen Clark had committed a string of offences, including interfering with cars and threatening a woman. The 52-year-old from Alamein Gardens pleaded guilty to a total of 13 charges. He was given a suspended sentence. He's also got to do rehab and pay £1,400.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses in Medway have approved plans for a £15 million refurb of their council offices. The Gunwharf headquarters will be modernised and include a new council chamber and cafe. The work will also see potentially dangerous rack concrete removed, which has kept sections of the building closed since 2023. Work on a new stroke unit in Kent could get underway in the coming weeks. The 54-bed hyper-acute facility at the William Harvey in Ashford will incorporate services currently offered at the Kent and Canterbury Hospital. NHS bosses say construction could start on June the 1st. Now, this comes as facilities at the West Kent Community Diagnostic Centre are going to be upgraded to give patients access to quicker checks, tests and scans. It's part of a £237 million investment in the NHS to boost diagnostic capacity and deliver more care in the local community. Enhancements for the site in Maidstone could include specialist kit, new clinic rooms and additional services. Margate's Turner Contemporary, meantime, has been awarded £865,000 to improve access to arts and culture. The money will be used for new solar panels and upgrades to gallery systems to bring them up to international exhibition standards. It's part of a £1.5 billion package to support cultural infrastructure projects across the South East. Kent's getting a royal visitor today. The Duchess of Gloucester is meeting staff, volunteers and people supported by the Blackthorn Trust. The charity, which is based in Maidstone, is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year and runs therapeutic workshops for people with mental health conditions. And finally, former MasterChef presenter Greg Wallace says he plans on selling his Kent home because he can't live the life he used to. The 61-year-old who lives in Biddenden was sacked by the BBC last July following an investigation into misconduct allegations. In a post on Instagram, he said he plans to buy a more modest house and work less.
I can't have the life I used to have, but whether you choose to believe it or not, I really wanted to come out of that anyway. Obviously, not in the dramatic way that I did. But now I've got some choices, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this. I want to ease off a little bit. I want to relax a little bit, but also that comes also with wanting financial security for me and my family, because I've got a wife that's much younger than me and a special needs little boy, Sid. So I want to relax a little bit and at the same time make sure that I can have a certain lifestyle and that I leave a legacy for my family. And that's not easy to do, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this. So my plans are, I think, to sell this enormous house, buy a more modest house, work less, and spend possibly half the year in Italy making adventures for my family, because we love Italy, and possibly homeschooling my little special needs boy as well. I will keep you up to date in how I'm getting on, but if you are faced with decisions like that, do let me know.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and Gillingham will be looking to go four games unbeaten in League Two tonight as they travel to take on Cheltenham Town. It follows Saturday's 0-0 draw against promotion-chasing Salford City. The Jewels don't have much to play for as they're 17th in the League Two table, and Gillingham manager Gareth Ainsworth says things haven't always been easy this season.
I just have to keep this demeanour about me all the time, no matter how it's going. and it can go badly sometimes, and everyone's booing and blaming you and having a go, and that's quite a distant memory now, but not for me. I understand how frustrated fans are. I understand what they want, but I also understand that football goes like a roller coaster sometimes, and I know the reasons why we weren't great, and I know the reasons why we are decent now, and I want the season to end really, and I want the season to regroup, rebuild in the summer and come back, because I hate it when there's not much to play for, but there always is for me. It's always 3 points in the game. We'll have a look at rotating on Tuesday, because I don't want any injuries, you know, and anyone who knows football, they don't want to be injured in the summer. It's their time off with their families. They need to finish the season positive, do their work, get back for next season. So there'll be no risk on anyone. But I want the target of last season to be matched or bettered, and just say, look, we've improved. I think we're very much around the same. I think there's all sorts of reasons we can go back to this season of why things haven't gone there, and I probably played a part in that as well. But next season will be different, and I'll say it once more. Will be better than when I first walked in the door. I guarantee that. Hopefully, a lot better.
We can hear next from goalkeeper Glenn Morris. He pulled off a fantastic double save in that game at the weekend. He's also been reflecting on their overall performance.
We've got to 50 points, and it's not what we was looking for at the start of the season. But yeah, you know, we're not looking over our shoulders. We can look, you know, up the league a little bit. I mean, obviously, we'd want to finish a lot higher as a football club. But yeah, we'll see where we go next few games. I mean, don't get carried away. We've had a couple of good results, and yeah, we know it hasn't been good enough this season. But we can't look back anymore. We can only look forward, and all we can do is go on to Tuesday and try and put in a very similar performance. I think they're a different animal now after January Cheltenham. So we know that will be tough, and yeah, they've got a lot of firepower, and we'll have to stand up and be counted there as well.
Kick-off tonight is at 7:45. We'll bring you reaction to the result in tomorrow's episode of the podcast. Staying with football, and Ken's Alessia Russo's due in World Cup qualifier action for England later. The Lionesses are taking on Spain in Group C. Kick-off at Wembley is at 7. And finally, in cricket, Kent have salvaged an unlikely draw on the final day of their county championship match against Northamptonshire. They were forced to follow on at Canterbury after the visitors declared on 684 for 2 in their first innings. An unbeaten century from Ben Compton saw the home side finish on 253 for 5 in their second go with the bat. Kent won't be in action again until they start the Red Bull match against Worcestershire next Friday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.